Merkle Media.
Flashback Fridays on Macroaggressions. We are taking you back to September 16th, 2020, episode number 56, Mainstream Media versus Humanity. If you're interested in converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency, or maybe even your retirement accounts, into physical gold or silver, you can go to our website, www.macroaggressions.gold. Talk to Tony Arterburn over there at Wise Wolf, and he'll hook you up. Now, enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morrison.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. How you doing? If you want to check us out, you can see the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. And I'll put our social media links in the description box below. You can check us out there. My favorite enemy in the world is the mainstream media. I hate them. You know, maybe I should try to be objective about it and just maybe give them a chance. And I hate them. Okay. They're the worst. They are the enemy of humanity. And I've been saying that long before Donald Trump came around and started calling people fake news, which he's right. And I don't agree with him on a lot of stuff, but he's damn right about that. And so that's what we're going to get into. I want to talk a little bit about the way the media is set up, the way it works as a functional arm of the government, the de facto public relation arm of the White House, maybe not so much during this Trump administration, but certainly the administrations before him, and why it's so dangerous and how they can, you know, turn a nothing situation into a hot war just by talking about it constantly. When I've talked about the, you know, the eight tentacles of this octopus that I wrote about, most people just assume that the military tentacle is the most dangerous because it involves the killing component, the war component. But before you can have a war, you have to ramp it up. You have to talk about it. You have to get the population behind you for it. You have to fill the people's heads with all of the stories about how terrible the other country is, about how they're going to come and kill us if we don't go and kill them. You know, we either fight them on their soil, or, you know, we wait for them to come and we fight them on our, you know, all that stuff. And that is all fueled by the media. They do that not on accident. They do that because it's good for their ratings. They do that because they're told to. They do that because they push for war. They do that because the media conglomerates that own these news channels and newspapers also own companies in the military industrial complex segment of the economy. So when you've got NBC News and their, you know, chief liar, Brian Williams, talking about war constantly and how we need it and how, you know, the only choice is, you know, do we invade Syria tomorrow, next week, or next month? And those are your only three choices. You have to understand that part of that is fueled by the fact that the media gets higher ratings when you've got conflicts like that going on. And also part of that is that the parent company, General Electric, owns companies that make bombs, you know, that make components for bombs and components for airplanes that are used in military warfare and things like that. So the parent companies, they get it. They benefit in a variety of industries, you know, not just their media, but also their armaments and their technical components that they make. So, and of course, then if you want to dig even deeper to that, you've got interlocking board of directors positions where people sit on multiple boards. And so somebody that's on the, you know, the board of NBC or whoever their parent company, Comcast now, I guess, you know, will also be on the board of Halliburton or Lockheed Martin or someplace like that. And so if you think that the news, you know, your corporate nightly news is going to tell you like every side to the story, they're just not. They're not set up to do that. You know, you've got a national nightly news broadcast that's 30 minutes long. When you factor in commercials, you're talking about 22 minutes of actual news. And what, they're going to tell you what's happening on every important story going on in the world? Of course not. I mean, they've got the dog that fell down the well story that'll go at the end of, you know, at the end of the broadcast, you know, I fell in the well and then these brave firemen came and they got him out and everyone is happy. I'm Lester Holt, you know, see you tomorrow, that type of thing. And then you've got to take into account that not just are they controlled by what they're talking about as far as like setting an agenda in conjunction with the White House, but setting an agenda with the military industrial complex as well. The Council on Foreign Relations drives a lot of the programming for the mainstream media in the United States and in Europe too. Tavistock Institute has a lot to do with the programming for the BBC, and I'm sure there's, you know, finds its way into the United States programming as well. You have NGOs that are involved in shaping some of the narratives. And then lastly, and maybe most importantly, you have the advertisers. And now you might think that the advertisers don't have a say in what goes on in the nightly news, but that's not exactly true, because what you'll see is, especially with regard to Big Pharma, Big Pharma has a say in what goes on in the news. Okay. They get stories killed all the time so that they don't show up on the nightly news. When 60% of your advertising revenue for your nightly news and local news too, for that part, comes from pharmaceutical companies. And this is United States specific, because it's only United States and New Zealand where they allow television commercials for pharmaceutical ads to be run. But in the United States, when you get 60% of your ad revenue from one industry, Big Pharma, you become beholden to them. That's just obvious. I'm not even blaming them necessarily. I mean, I think it's shitty, of course, but I'm not surprised. I mean, I understand from a business standpoint. So the people that, you know, if you take this just as an example, you've got questions about vaccines, right? And people are saying, well, you know, I'm undecided about vaccines. I've been hearing, you know, they save lives all these years. And then I'm hearing another side, which is that there might be a little bit more to it, that maybe they have some links to autism and maybe they cause autoimmune disease and maybe there's some problems with them. And so you've got somebody, let's just say, that's on the fence on the vaccine debate. And what they really would like is to hear both sides of it. Now, they hear one side of it on the nightly news, you know, talking about, hey, you know, the CDC has released the statistics today showing this is the worst flu season in history, urging people to go and get the flu shot and blah, 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 blah. All right, so you get that. Now, if you're waiting for our intrepid reporter, Brian Williams, to come on and then talk to you about some of the problems that they're having with the vaccines that are causing autism, you'll be waiting for that report forever. It's not coming. It'll never come. Not a good one, at least. Not an honest one. Just ask Cheryl Atkinson of CBS. You know, when her story on swine flu back in 2009 came out, or, well, didn't come out, I guess, is a more accurate way to say it. She was a writer for CBS News, and they took her story that was groundbreaking, showing that the swine flu was fake, and they put it up on the website, but they didn't put it up on, they didn't run the actual story on their nightly news, even though one of the producers said, this is the most important story we've got about this. And that's not accidental. That's because you get pressure. So if Brian Williams, who by the way is not an actual reporter, he's just a Ken doll reading the teleprompter. But if he were actually a reporter and he dug into this and he proposed this great story and he put together a great story about how the vaccine, you know, how there's ties between the adjuvants that are added to vaccines and the rise in autism, and there's something to be looked into here and we need to take this seriously. If he ran that story on the nightly news, the next morning, the president of Merck would be in the president of NBC's office, threatening him, screaming at him about how he was going to pull, you know, $3 or $4 billion worth of advertising from that network if they didn't get that clown off the air and stop talking about vaccines and autism in the same breath. And that's how it works. So advertisers in some cases do have a say in the content that fills the airwaves for television, mainstream media, and also radio. NPR, National Public Radio. Oh, it's National Public Radio. It's funded by your tax dollars. Bullshit. It's funded by the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers run that. Okay? They don't tell you. They don't make a big deal about telling you that. But that's who's funding it. So you're getting an agenda. What you're never getting on your mainstream nightly news is an objective look at things. You're just not. You're not even getting the same story from network to network to network. You know, you get a slant of it on one version on Fox News. You'll get another slant on MSNBC. You'll get CNN. And I mean, I got to be honest with you guys. In my opinion, CNN is the worst organization. I don't know. Definitely the worst media organization, the worst company. Oh boy, I don't know. I can't really say worst company because I think Monsanto has that. Lockheed Martin's up there pretty high too. CNN has done more to disinform the public than just about any network out there. And it's such a shame too, because I remember the Iraq War in 91, and I was a freshman in college at USC, and we would come home at night, and that war started. And remember the night vision footage where you would see the AA guns and Peter Arnett and Bernard Shaw were underneath the bed in that hotel in Baghdad, and bombs were going off all around, and they were pissing their pants, and I were just like fast. And we used to get so high and watch the news, and it was. it was fascinating. You know, it was like a made for TV war. And I don't, and now I look back on that and it's a horrible thing to say that it's a made for TV war because real people were really dying and it's terrible and reprehensible and all that's and everything. But it was the first war that was really, I mean, I don't know. I was 18, but it was the first war that was, seemed like it was made for TV, you know, and we were tuned in every night and that was CNN and they jumped onto the scene with that 24-hour coverage and people couldn't get enough and they were tuning in to watch what's going on. And then, you know, you look at where they started with that and where they ended up, where they are now. And they're just like a parody of themselves. I mean, CNN is just filled with utter garbage. The people that work there, you know, you've got Anderson Cooper, CIA asset. You've got Aaron Burnett, Council on Foreign Relations. You've got a bunch of people that are puppets, not even real people, actors. Jeff Berwick told me a story about how he was in, I forget where they were. I want to say Belgium or someplace, for one of the Bilderberg meetings. They snuck into it and they kind of got trapped in this hotel and they wound up just trying to act normal, like they meant to be there. And they wound up in a room, like a ballroom, small ballroom with a bunch of the reporters that were there to cover, like guys that they recognized from TV. And they said, "Hey, what are you guys doing here?" And Jeff was with, I think, Luke Radowski. And they said, "We're journalists. We're covering this." And all the TV anchors laugh and they go, "Oh, wow. You guys are like real journalists." And they're like, "Yeah. What are you guys?" And they're like, "Oh, we're actors." They like admitted it to him. They're like, "Oh, we're just actors. I mean, like, you guys are actually doing real journalism." So, I mean, it's nice to know that at least on some level they will admit to it. And in keeping in the format of, you know, my book, where I brought in the quotes from all the different people that had a role in some of this, I want to read some of the quotes that I put in the chapter about the media because they're so relevant. Especially these days, they don't really go out of style. Like this quote from Malcolm X, he said, "The media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and make the guilty innocent. And that's power because they control the minds of the masses." I mean, we really love to think of ourselves as free thinkers, but the reality is we aren't really all that free. I mean, we're barely capable of thought these days. I mean, maybe not the people listening to this, but I'm talking about like the general public. I mean, without the media's help, right? The media tells us what to think, how to feel about things. And it's a dangerous trap to outsource your thinking to somebody else. Especially when you don't know who they are, you don't know what their intentions are, you don't know who they're working for. So if you decide, you know, thinking's hard, and I'm just going to come home from work, I'll turn on the news, they'll tell me what's on, they'll tell me what's happened, and then you go out, you take that information, you go out about your business the following day, thinking that you've got it all the story sorted out, you're at a severe disadvantage. You just are not getting, you're not getting the truth, or maybe you're not getting the full truth. You might be getting 80% truth and 20% lies, which is just enough to make you sound like you know what you're talking about. But the lie component is just enough to screw you up so that you actually don't know what you're talking about. In fact, Mark Twain said this, "If you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you read the newspaper, you're misinformed." And that's absolutely, it's absolutely true, you know? So, I want to read this, this is a couple paragraphs from a movie called Network, which came out in 1976. And I know that a lot of people will recognize clips from this, this little monologue that Howard Beale, said in this movie. You'll recognize, you might know the "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore" line. That's from this. So I want to read you what he said. This is while he's in the scene in the movie is that he's a news anchor and he's just been working for this corporate nightly news for a while. And he does what we hope secretly all of them would do. He has a breakdown on air and he just flips the fuck out. He starts talking about the truth and he starts ranting and it's awesome, right? It's like one of the best scenes in movie history and it's from 76. So, you know, you're like, God, that's like 40 years ago. And is it any, you know, I mean, that's irrelevant. It's so relevant. It's what's crazy about it is how relevant this quote is. So I'm going to start. I'm not going to do it in his voice or anything, but just imagine he just, you know, he just gets more and more fired up and he just gets angrier and angrier to the point where at the end he's literally screaming. So it goes like this. I don't have to tell you that things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat, and we sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. And if that's the way it's supposed to be, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy. So we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house. And slowly, the world we are living in is getting smaller. And all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radials, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the streets. All I know is that first you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. Well, given this coronavirus shutdown, lockdown, pandemic hype, more and more of us, I think, will probably be able to relate to this quote. That you're inside your house and your world's getting smaller and smaller and you just want to be, you just want, just let me have, leave me alone. Let me have my toaster. Let me have my steel belted radials and my TV. We kind of feel like that. And who's doing that to us? Who's telling us what we have to do? The government and the media. Two institutions that have zero credibility. I mean, the government lies constantly. I think that is probably the understatement of this entire podcast series. The government lies constantly. Understatement. But the media lies constantly too. They're no better. In fact, I would say they're worse because they do it with a big plastic smile on their face with some retard Ken doll like Brian Williams, who has no problem sitting up there telling you that he was in a helicopter that was shot at when it wasn't. He has no problem telling you that we are in awe of the beauty of our weaponry, quoting some Leonard Cohen song. Well, you know, he's just got himself the biggest boner in the world as he's watching these Tomahawk missiles get launched. I mean, this is who we have decided we are going to take orders from. We're going to allow them to shape our version of reality. And that is what the media does. The media is in charge of shaping your version of reality. There's two types of lies the media tells. One is the outright lie. And they do it so well, and they do it so easily. They've been doing it for 60 years. They know what they're doing. And then there is the lie by omission. And this is maybe even more devious, because what it is it's this feeling that this assumption we make where, well, if that really happened, I would have heard about it on the nightly news, you know? Oh, if that was true, Tom Brokaw would have said, I would have heard something about that, or Peter Jennings, or name your guy, you know, from the old days. That's like how our parents or grandparents or whatever would, that was their relationship with the news, which was, the news is going to tell me what's happening in the world so that I'm informed. And if they don't tell me about a story, well, then I guess it wasn't that important. Because if it was important enough, surely they would have talked about it on the news. Now, that is not true. That is the dangerous component of this, because there is so much that they don't tell you that is actually going on, that is really interesting news. That would, you know, so they don't rank the news in terms of what is most relevant and most important for the average person to know. They don't do that. They rank it by agenda. How does this fit the agenda? Oh, we're slamming Trump this week. Oh, we're talking about impeachment this week. All right, great. Only going to run stories, depending on which network you are, that paint the president in a good light or paint the president in a bad light. We're going to focus on that. What they're not going to talk about is that the IPCC found out that Assad didn't actually gas his own people in Douma. And we've been telling everybody that he has been on three different occasions now. And we should probably correct that story because we got it wrong. That's not going to happen. That's not a story you are ever going to hear on your nightly news. So it's lies by omission. It is they can't just, you know, they're not going to go into the stories that don't fit the agenda, even if they're more interesting, more applicable, more relevant, more important than what they're currently talking about. They're always going to end with the dog that fell in the well and got pulled out. They're always going to end with that, you know, because then you're like, oh, Lester Holt, he wears a sweater vest. I like him, you know. Well, he works for a company that never fired Brian Williams and keeps Brian Williams on the payroll and pays him more money than the rest of us will make in our lifetime in 1 year to continue to lie. So, you know, this is how they do it. They come out and lie to you and tell you stories that aren't true. Then they also don't tell you stories that are true. And they never correct themselves too, by the way. And especially, and this is not, you know, this is not limited to television news. I'm talking about print media as well. You know, the headline, the incorrect headline is in, you know, 48-point print across the top. The retraction is in 12-point print on the second to last page of the living section on the bottom. You know, we regret an error we made a couple weeks ago, blah, blah, blah. You know, so they bury that because, you know, they're honest. So, I mean, I think Americans are used to, they're accustomed to a certain level, you know, a certain amount of murderous insanity just because the nightly news tells them that this is what we should be willing to expect. But the mainstream media, you know, there's a term that is well known. If it bleeds, it leads. Meaning if it's a story about someone getting murdered, it'll be the lead story on the nightly news because it's interesting. It is interesting. It's a fascinating, you know, it's interesting to hear stories about that. It's not pleasant, but it's interesting. And they know that. And this is a form of, It's really a form of psychological warfare, if you want to get right down to it, because they want to control your mind and they want to put you in a fear-based reaction, brain wave function, like a low vibrational energy. And I know that sounds kind of like woo-woo, but there is something to that. They want you operating from a place of fear as opposed to a place of love. And part of that is that people that are fearful make different decisions. They prioritize things differently. They use a different part of their brain. They're more reactionary. They're more inclined to tell you, just save me. Just whatever you have to do, just make the problem go away. And that is, of course, beneficial to them and to the government and to everybody else that's trying to control how you behave. But it's not very beneficial to you because you are making decisions from a very, from a place that is more survival oriented than a place of like excelling. So, they'll tell you from time to time, warning graphic images. And you're like, oh, okay. Some people are like, okay, well, I'm going to turn it off. Other people are like, yeah, bring it on. Let's see the graphic images. They'll say, we have to warn you that this next segment is graphic and contains, graphic images. That's their little disclaimer. Meanwhile, how many times have you seen Building 1 and Building 2 come down from 9/11? 500 times? 1,000 times? I mean, honestly, 2,000? I mean, who knows? So you don't get warnings before they show that, right? That's by design. This is psychological torture. It is a psychological operation on your mind to condition you. They want you to see. You ever see Clockwork Orange? When they've got the guy's eyes pried open, making him watch rape videos on a loop. That's what this is. By the way, on a side note, Clockwork Orange and that mind control programming, that's MKUltra. That's trauma-based mind control, organized by the CIA in conjunction with the Tavistock Institute. That's what they were showing you. That's what Stanley Kubrick was showing you in that movie. And you think that doesn't happen today? It happens every single night on your nightly news. And my example of that is 9/11. They don't show you Building 7 coming down over and over and over again, because that is part of the story that doesn't add up, and they don't want you talking about that. But they want you to see Building 1 and 2 exploding, because that reinforces the reason why we have all of these wars and why we have the Patriot Act and why we have Department of Homeland Security and ICE and TSA and all that stuff. So some things, I mean, I think it's just fair to say the media are hypocrites, of course. So some things, warning, graphic images ahead. Other things, hey, check out these graphic images over and over and over again. So that is, that's what the media does. That's part of what they do. They're inconsistent in their reporting. They won't tell you the most important stories. They'll pretend to block you from traumatizing videos that they may or may not want you to see, while simultaneously saying, hey, look, 9/11 again. Here, let's show you this from a different angle. Let's show you this from this angle. Let's show you this from the helicopter angle. Let's show it to you. Hey, would you like to buy a Time Life series on 9/11? We'll give you this collector's edition book, and then we'll give you this DVD, and you can scare the shit out of yourself for the rest of your life by reading this. Here, it's only $19.99, and we'll act now. We'll throw in a second one for free. This is by design. They're screwing with us. They're traumatizing us. They want us to be scared. They want us to be fearful. Scared people make good consumers. And let's be honest, when it comes to the mainstream media, if you ask what are they trying to do, they're trying to turn everybody into consumers. They're trying to turn everybody into brainless sheep that just follow the crowd. And they'll tell you what to do. They'll tell you who to believe. They'll tell you what TV shows to watch. They'll tell you that everything is fine until it's not. Then they'll tell you everything is terrible and you have to be terrified. They run our lives. It's embarrassing. And I'm not exempt from this too. I fall into this trap. You know, I watch the nightly news, not to get informed, but I watch the nightly news to see what the lie is. I want to know what they're saying. I want to know what they're telling people. I want to know how bad it is. I want to know how bad they're telling everyone to feel. And with the coronavirus panic, you know, don't let the news tell you for a second that they're sad that this is happening. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to them. They got people tuning in that gave up on them a long time ago. And if it was up to the mainstream corporate media, they'd have a school shooting every single week. They love them. It's their favorite thing in the world. Don't for a second believe that they have a problem with that. They don't have a problem with it. They love it. George Orwell said, "Football, beer, filled up the horizon of their minds. To keep them in control was not difficult." Yeah, it's easy. Bread and circuses. We know about this. Seymour Hersh, he won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. He said, "All of the institutions we thought would protect us, particularly the press, but also the military, the bureaucracy, the Congress, they have failed. The courts, the jury's not in yet on the courts. So all the things that we expect would normally carry us through didn't. The biggest failure, I would argue, is the press, because that's the most glaring." You know, and he would know. Seymour Hersh has been, he's one of the few media guys that really gets it. He knew. He talked about how when he was coming up as a writer or a reporter in Chicago, there were certain aspects that he could write about. And he noticed that whenever he wrote about police, like shooting people, it never went anywhere. And, you know, his editor wouldn't run it, things like that. And he would question them, like, what is that? And they just said, "We don't report on the police doing those things. You know, it's bad for optics." And then he goes to Vietnam and he sees this, he covers this massacre. The troops just, you know, lit up a village and killed everybody in there. If you ever saw the movie Platoon, most people have, you know, that scene where he's, you know, "Let's do it, man. Let's do it. Let's do this whole village." When they just start lighting and making that guy, that one-legged guy, hop as he's shooting in the ground, you know, that whole scene was based on that My Lai massacre. And Seymour Hersh reported on that and won a Pulitzer for it. You know who else reported on massacres? Julian Assange. Funny, he didn't win a Pulitzer for that. He's stuck in a prison cell. So, you know, not all media is created equal. The alternative media, killing it, doing a great job. You've got, and especially the ladies. Let's just be honest here. Caitlin Johnstone, she's a savage. She's so good. Whitney Webb. Oh, Whitney Webb. I'll tell you what, if there was any justice, and I know there isn't, but if there was any justice in the Pulitzer Prize voting, she'd win the Pulitzer for her work covering Epstein, her four-part series on that. It is gold. She's great. So, you know, journalism's not dead. It's on life support. It's got to be so frustrating to be a legit real journalist and go get a job. You know, you go through college and you wind up at, you're like, "Oh, I'm going to go get a job at the Washington Post. You know, I'm going to be the next Woodward Bernstein. We're going to go break this story and everything." And you get there and you dig into something. You go, "I've got it. I've got the story. I've got the story on Jeffrey Epstein that no one else has." And you walk it to your editor and you drop it on his desk and you go, "Check this shit out. This is going to blow your mind. We are going to go right to the top with this. Your editor reads it, calls you back in his office an hour later and says, can't run this. And you're like, why? He said, because I've already got a phone call from Epstein's lawyer talking to me about a reporter that works for us sniffing around on some story. And he threatened to sue the shit out of us for this. And you're like, yeah, but it's true. You know, like I'm just envisioning this whole, I'm envisioning this conversation. You know, it's true. And what you come to find out is that the story never happens because your editor's boss has been to the island. You know what I mean? He's had dinner at the mansion with Epstein. He's had a girl. You know, he's had a massage. And the story's dead, and you're relocated to covering, you know, junior varsity basketball game, some shithole high school in the Ozarks. Congratulations. You're a reporter now. Enjoy. This is how it works. This is unfortunately how it works in the mainstream media. You know, all those people, they're like, oh, if I just do a good job and work really hard, I'll get up there and I can be an anchor just like Anderson Cooper. Oh, no, that's not how it works. That's not even close to how, oh, I'll be like Rachel Maddow. Look, Rachel Maddow is a Rhodes Scholar. And that sounds impressive when you hear that on the surface. Like, oh, she's a Rhodes Scholar. That means she's smart. Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar too. Cecil Rhodes was a notorious pedophile scumbag who worked for the British government, an oligarch before, you know, before there were oligarchs, who set up this Rhodes Scholarship as a way to find people that will continue to parrot the establishment talking points correctly. So, you know, think about what these reporters go through. You know, you get paid $7 million a year, do a nightly news show for 30 minutes. What are you going to do? What's Rachel Maddow going to do? If she wakes up one day, grows a conscience, decides, I can't do it anymore. I can't go and spread the lies. I think maybe in her case, she actually believes the lies. But let's just say there was somebody struggling, right? Anderson Cooper. Let's just say Anderson Cooper grew a conscience and decided he couldn't do it anymore. He's just going to walk away. Okay, that's cool. There's 100 people that'll take his place. They don't care. They're not hung up on, you know, things like ethics and accountability and truth. They don't give a shit. $7 million a year, most people would light their mother on fire. So you can't count on, and by the way, that's how they're rewarded. That's how you're rewarded for playing ball. You always, you know, people wonder like, oh, well, how come someone like Whitney Webb doesn't get a job at Washington Post? Because she's Whitney Webb. Because they would never hire her because they don't want somebody in there digging around in these real stories. What they want is someone that's controllable, someone they can tell what to do and have them do it. Not somebody that's going to actually do their job. That's not what they're about. They're about, you know, using lies and deceit to shape reality. They don't want this truth. You're out there digging up the truth. They're not interested in that. They don't hire people like that. So this is part of the reason why it seems like there's a constant flow of people, you know, working for media organizations that all have the same train of thought. Well, that's right. That's true. That's how it is. Part of it is that you would never be hired to go work at MSNBC if you had an opinion that was too variant from what everyone at that network thinks. They just wouldn't hire you. So it becomes, you know, just a, you know, a circle jerk of a bunch of people all saying the same thing and feeling the same thing because that's how they feel. So journalism is dead. I mean, real journalism in the mainstream media is dead. It's been dead for a long, long time. It's just, you know, I kind of joked. There was this video clip that I saw that showed this it was like an AI robotic, a Chinese news anchor. And he was actually AI and he was reading the news. It wasn't real. It was like a composite of people. And I jokingly posted that and with the caption that, like, how dare you, China, come in and try and steal our ideas? You know, we've had soulless news robots for 30 years. You know, get your own soulless automatron robot dolls. Leave our news people alone. And because that's what they are. They're just puppets. You know, they're reading the teleprompters. And never was it more clear than when the Sinclair Media Group put out those ads where they had Sinclair Media is that group that owns a lot of, like, 200 plus of the local news stations. And they said, you know, they had the anchors read a script where they talked about the spread of fake news and how dangerous it is, the spread of fake news. But they were all reading the same script. And I think most people would probably have seen this video, but it's like, you know, they cut to one anchor saying it, and then they cut to the other anchor saying it, and they're saying the same thing. And then they pull back and they show like eight of them all saying this, reading the same lines. They've synced them up so that they're all saying the same words at the same time. Then they pull back even further and there's like 100 of them all saying the same thing. And they don't even realize the irony of what they're doing. They're complaining about fake news being dangerous to our discord in this country and how we can't have real, honest conversations with all this fake news. Meanwhile, they're all reading off of the same script about fake news being as fake as fuck, as fake as you can possibly be. But that's the mainstream news for you. They don't even understand their own irony. They don't even get it. Peter Dale Scott, who's an author, he's the guy that coined the term deep state. He said, disinformation, in order to be effective, must be 90% accurate. I think it's important to realize that Operation Mockingbird, which was a CIA operation that started in the 60s, is real. I mean, it is real. It's declassified. I mean, there's no debating it anymore, but it's real. It was put in place in the 60s and it is currently still in place. And, you know, the Mockingbird moniker is because, you know, the Mockingbird's cards say same thing over and over again. And the CIA infiltrated the nightly news. Well, the news desks, not necessarily national news, although they definitely did, but I mean, all news organizations and placed people in there. And you can hear them talk about this in the Church Commission hearings, which happened in the late 70s or 75, I think, where they talk about that, where there is a Senate hearing, and they're interviewing the guys and, you know, they're talking about how the CIA has, you know, has their people stationed in all of these offices. And then the one guy kind of, you know, whispers to his lawyer and he says, you know, I think this is the type of topic that we would want to get into in special session and not here in front of everybody. And they're all like, oh, okay. We know what that means. That means we're not going to do this in front of the cameras and in front of the public, in front of everybody here. Like, we'll talk to you about this behind closed doors, which is to say, yes, the CIA is there, and shut up about it. So they're still here. They're still in all the news organizations. You know, they're there. They're not just corporate television news, but Washington Post is like the CIA. It's always been the CIA's newspaper. I mean, it's kind of a joke about that, but now it's owned by Bezos, and Bezos has direct ties to the military industrial complex. And so it's just a mouthpiece for the CIA. So you really can't take anything they say as the truth. And as Peter Dale Scott says, because 90% of it will be accurate, but 10% of it will be lies. And that'll be just enough of a lie to really throw you off and really put you in a position where you can't, you know, where the whole statement is poisoned by that. William Cooper, author of Behold the Pale Horse, said, "Media, keep the adult public attention diverted away from the real social issues and captivated by matters of no real importance." That's us. That's America. You know, sorry, but it is. You know, and I feel like, oh, 9/11, man. 9/11 did it for me. It did it for me. It woke me up to all this. Not on the day of 9/11 or anything like that, but, you know, years later. And part of it, when you look back on it, you look back on the role of the media in it. And they're so guilty. They're so guilty of being involved in 9/11. In shaping the narrative and failing to ask real questions and ignoring obvious topics that were like right in front of their faces and passing off these bullshit stories like a hijacker's passport flew out of the crash site and landed at the feet of a FBI agent, if you can believe that, like Garrett Utley says, which is in the intro to this podcast. You know, in failing to acknowledge that Building 7 came down. Well, first of all, acknowledging that Building 7 came down 25 minutes before Building 7 came down, like Jane Stanley from the BBC did, that's a problem. That's something that you can't really work your way out of. How did you know that that building was coming down before that building came down? Because you're reading off a script? Because you didn't get your time zone, you didn't get your time change calculated correctly, and you read it an hour too early. I mean, you know, the media was caught with their pants down on 9/11. You know, reporting about Shanksville and all of the, oh, you know, look at this plane exploded. Where are the pieces? Oh, and these brave passengers, they stood up and they got together and they said, "Let's roll." And then they kicked the cockpit door open and they got those hijackers and they put the plane in the ground. That's a great story, bro. Where are all the dead bodies? I've got 9 quotes in my book from coroners, FBI agents, and cops that were on the scene at Shanksville, all saying the same thing. There were no bodies. There's no blood. There are no suitcases. There are no seats. There was no nothing. There was a hole with a bunch of metal parts everywhere, but there's nothing else. That Flight 93 story is a fully concocted media invention. Sorry. Sorry to piss on anybody's fairy tale of let's roll, but that whole story is 100% bullshit. It didn't happen. It's a non-event. Didn't happen. Media responsible for that. Plane crashed into the Pentagon. Where are all the dead bodies? Where's the tail section? Where are the wings? How do you get the wings to fit in that little hole? Why is Rumsfeld out there on the front lawn picking up pieces of it? What's going on here? Why'd the FBI confiscate all those tapes? Media, silent. So the media, I feel like, you know, like that bank robber that's gotten away with it his whole life, and he comes out and he's retired and he's just done, and he comes out of retirement to pull that one last job, and that's the one that gets him caught. I feel like that's 9/11 for the mainstream media. They had to pull that one last lie and they just got caught. And I'm not saying that everybody that works at the media was in on it. And I'm not saying that everybody knows what, you know, knew what they were doing. And a lot of people were doing their job, filming it with the cameras, reading scripts. And if you're one of these, you know, dopey anchors, they give you a teleprompter to read and a script to read, and you just do it and you just talk about it, you know, like you know what you're talking about. That's how you record it. So I don't even know that they were necessarily in on it. I think like with regard to Garrett Utley, talking about, you know, hijacker's passport was found blocks away from the crime scene. If you can believe that, he throws in, if you can believe that, because he can't believe the words are coming out of his mouth. Neither can I. Like, he just had to hedge his bet a little bit. Like, if you can believe that, why would anyone believe that? No, nobody can believe that. And, you know, so you've got 9/11 where they prove that the media is lying. Then you've got the 2016 elections. And if that isn't an indication that the media had a bias on this, I don't know what is. I mean, Hillary Clinton, if that was a prop bet at Caesar's Palace, if that was a bet, like who's going to, it would have been taken off the board. It was so slanted in Hillary Clinton's favor, or you'd have to, it'd be, you know, 700-1. You know, some crazy, you know, or plus 700, I should say, where you get a bet. You got to bet $700 on Hillary Clinton to win $100. It was such a, you know, it was such a, such a landslide it was going to be. And they got it wrong. Uh-oh. Trump won. I'm not happy about that. I'm not happy about Hillary. I don't like either of them. But, uh-oh. You know, the media would have you believe, what's the point of even voting? It's done. It's in the bag. She's got this wrapped up. Madam President. Remember Madam President? Newsweek does. Newsweek printed Madam President with her on the cover of their new magazine. You know how like when teams are playing like in the seventh game of the World Series and they print up shirts that say like Chicago Cubs and Cleveland Indians World Series champs, you know, and then the Cleveland Indian shirts get sent to Africa because nobody buys them because they didn't win. That's what Newsweek printed up. They printed up a version showing Trump, President Trump, and also President Clinton. But the problem was that the Madam President version with Hillary Clinton on the cover, they took that to newsstands on election night to be sold before the results were even in, because they were so sure they'd have it wrapped up. And they sent them out. They sent them out in advance to subscribers. You want to know how many copies that they sent out of Madam President? 125,000. Newsweek sent out 125,000 copies of the cover of their new magazine, Madam President, with Hillary Clinton on the cover, even because they thought she was going to win. That's the media for you. Congratulations. You suck at your job. You really, honestly, are terrible. You're the enemy of mankind. I mean, we live in a post-truth world. That's what it. The truth is whatever they say it is. That's what it's become these days. The media is in charge of creating false narratives, maintaining currently established paradigms like America is the good guys, America is a force for freedom, America is spreading democracy, America is delivering humanitarian aid, America doesn't interfere with foreign elections, Russia does interfere with foreign elections, Iran is going to destroy Israel, Iran doesn't respect Israel's right to exist. And we could just go on and on and on. That's the narrative that the media works to preserve. All not true, by the way. All those statements, not true. America is not spreading democracy. They're dropping bombs on people. They're not interested in humanitarian aid. If they were, they'd be helping the people in Yemen, which they're not. America doesn't interfere in foreign elections. They interfere in every foreign election. Not only do they not interfere, they're involved in everything. Oh, we got to spread some democracy in Venezuela. You know what Venezuela is missing? Democratically elected president. So what we've got to do is we'll find some guy named Juan Guaido, who nobody in Venezuela has ever fucking heard of, and we're going to make him the president because they need some democracy. I mean, it's the hypocrisy in the United States foreign policy that is magnified by the media is staggering. It's embarrassing. It's too much. And yet, you know, you point this out to somebody, like the average television viewer, and they'll look at you like you're crazy. Professor Mark Crispin from NYU had a pretty good quote. He said, media manipulation in the U.S. today is more efficient than it was in Nazi Germany, because here we have the pretense that we are getting all the information we want. That misconception prevents people from even looking for the truth. So that's a devious trick that they play. It's the lie by omission concept, where you mistakenly assume that all evidence has been brought to the table to support, you know, either version of events, that all the evidence has been brought and what, after examining it all, we've come up with this is we're getting all the information that we want. We're not getting all the information that we want. We're getting a slight version of it. And part of this has to do with the media consolidation that happened in the United States over the last 25 years. And that started under Bill Clinton, like most bad things do, where he freed them up to consolidate. There had been rules in place before. He deregulated that, of course, and then they started to click up, you know, into bigger and bigger chunks with fewer and fewer players. It used to be, you know, 50 different media organizations. Now there's 5. So you might think that you get closer to the truth if you only have 5 versions of reality, but in actuality, what you're getting is closer to the lies, because it only takes the heads of 5 different corporations to be controlled in order to change the message, as opposed to having to control 50 different heads of corporations to control the message. And one of the things that's better about having more options, more different ownership groups involved, is that they can check each other. You know, if one company has better reporting, they can scoop the others. They can get the story and they can put the story out, and they can break news that way. And it forces the others to have to be accurate, because you never know if this other company is working on the same story, and they're going to come out with a vastly different version of events based on some real credible facts that they've dug up and make you look bad if you're lying about it. But those days are gone because of the consolidation. And so that has really shaped our reality. The major corporations, be it, you know, someone on the local level like Sinclair Group, or Disney and Fox, or Disney is Fox now, but, or Fox is Disney, I should say. But, you know, these multinational conglomerates, they also have no allegiance to one country over another. They're just globalists, run by globalists, owned by globalists, pushing a global agenda. And we act surprised when we don't get the truth. You know, the alternative media is where it's going. I mean, it's where you have to look if you want to get as close to the truth as you can. It's not to say that everyone in the alternative media is right all the time. That is not happening. But at least there's a push. At least there's an effort to get there. we don't always get there. We make mistakes, but at least you know that the people working in the alternative media tend to be coming from a position of trying to figure this shit out and get you the most accurate information they can. There's no money in it. That's one of the downsides to this whole thing, is that I think you can write books about these unusual topics, or you can do podcasts, or you can write for Activist Post, or you can write for antiwar.com or whatever. That's great. I do all those things. But you can't make money doing that. But I'll tell you where you can make money: working at CNN in their anchor chair. You can make $12 million a year. But you got to play the game. Check out the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Take this episode, share it. Because like we said, the mainstream media, these media channels, these social media channels, networks, they're not going to let you, they're not going to offer this up. The algorithms are rigged against us. So it's up to you to share it, download it, share it, spread the word. It's the only way we're going to make a change in this. But we can do it. We got to stay positive. But we also have to be very suspicious of the people on your nightly news that are telling you how to think. You're big boys and girls. You can figure it out for yourself. You don't need Anderson Cooper to tell you how to feel about Syria. Fuck that guy. Take care, everybody.